want to thank you for coming out the last day of the conference here. I know it's tempting to go and see some of the public sites here in Boston. It's a beautiful city, so I really appreciate you making the time to learn a little bit more about our work and our partners' work. I have a large task here of having 15 minutes to kind of tell you the world of what we do at CDC related to obesity prevention. I'm from Wisconsin, but I'm a fast talker. So folks sometimes think I'm from Manhattan or somewhere else, but it's because we have so much great work going on that I really want to share it with you. So as Barb said, we're in the Division of Nutrition, Physical Activity, and Obesity. We're not the only folks that do work in obesity prevention. We have partners in our school health branch, which are in another division of population health. We have the grantees that are part of the Division of Community Health, which is the grants administration for communities putting prevention at work, community transformation grants, REACH. But we're really the folks, many of us trained in nutrition, physical activity, in other settings approaches that really try to support those grantees. So today you will have a little bit of a biased view in that I'm really kind of sharing a lot from our division of NPAO, but I'm also happy to put you in touch with other folks who support this type of work. I have no complex relationships to disclose. So public health, you know, a lot of times I'm in this uniform and I'll be on a plane or in the grocery store and someone will think I'm a Delta pilot. But that gives me the ability to really be, I'll have a little PSA time to talk to them about what public health is. So I'll tell them I'm with the Public Health Service and that I work at CDC, and they'll be like, oh, you know, I don't think I've ever used public health. They say, oh, I go to a medical doctor, I don't use a public health doctor. And I say, oh, well, we're the folks that help put sidewalks in your community, and we're the folks helping keep the lights on, you know, in the track on the weekends. You can use that school for exercise. So I think we've got a lot of work to do, and you saw it during the furlough, right? Folks say, well, it really wasn't a big deal that CDC was shut down. Yeah, maybe for food safety, maybe for flu, but chronic disease, you know, what's 10 and a half days? You know, that. So it's really hard. So I really want folks to think about how do we make the case to folks above us, folks who fund, folks who appreciate this work, you know, how do we make it relevant? Because it is chronic. You know, we're not acute. So just to get that there, how to think about that. So these are some of the core functions that we're responsible for, but we really think of them as emergency situations. You know, we really have to compete for funds at CDC. And so these are some of our core functions that I'll talk about today. Surveillance, applied research, guidelines development, best practices, and then helping our partners, you know, do the best work they can. So really grassroots public health. So I wanted to share, so Barb talked about this. In 2000, we funded 6 state health departments for nutrition, physical activity, and obesity. By that time, we had already created the slides from our BRFSS data that were starting to show the nation getting this increasing blue to red colors of the obesity epidemic. At that time, we only funded 6 states. We moved up over time, in another 5 years, around 2005, we funded 25 states. So we still only funded half the nation, yet this epidemic was brewing, and we had the data to show that. Over time, we lost money. We went down to 23 states. We tried to give them a little more money. But we did see this increase through the Recovery Act, ARA, where for 2 years, we were able to have a national program. So we funded 50 states for the first time. That money went away after 2 years. But now what we've done is combined with three other programs at CDC, diabetes, heart disease and stroke, school health, and our own division, to pool that money to have more of a coordinated logic model to think about prevention all the way to disease management. And that's what this new 5-year program is. So it's got a long title, but everybody wanted their name in the title. So Public Health Actions to Prevent and Control Diabetes, Heart Disease, Obesity, and Associated Risk Factors, so that's nutrition, physical activity, and Promote School Health. And this really is the first time where all 50 states are receiving 5 years of funding to work on these prevention efforts. So within that cooperative agreement, we do have 4 domains, kind of the core of what we do, the FDA surveillance, but then also where we really work, which is the environmental approaches to promote health and support and reinforce those behaviors. We also, though, have some spillage into the health system interventions and community clinical linkages. So if you've heard talks about community health workers, we can really think about how obesity can lend itself to more of those community interventions, especially with ACA and as we think about how obesity exists in the clinical setting. But at the basic level, what we're really trying to do with all 50 states is to promote the adoption of food service guidelines and nutrition standards. Again, this could be in childcare settings, schools, large workplaces. We're trying to promote the adoption of physical education and activity in schools, and again, physical activity in the childcare setting. In addition to that money for all 50 states, we have 32 states that have a smaller or a boost in their money to work on a few more select strategies. So some of that's community access to healthy food and beverages, so healthy food retail, farmers markets, some more of those community level improvements. Again, more implementation of food service guidelines, and then supportive nutrition environments in schools. So that's more like food marketing in schools, after school programs. So not just the competitive food arena, but more of a comprehensive approach to making those healthy model places. Again, the 32 states that are enhanced have a little more money to do more physical activity work. Again, a lot of walking, and some of the data that we have from community guides showing walking with outreach, designing streets and communities for physical activity, more childcare, more ECE, and then also access to breastfeeding-friendly environments. So a lot of this having to do with birthing facilities and really supporting moms who choose to breastfeed. In addition to those 50 states, so that grant in total is $68 million, and it's our division puts in $16 million. So that, think about what the food industry spends on January 2nd. Okay, we're probably already outspent. So we've got a big mountain ahead of us, but we at least have the strategies out there that everybody will be trying to work on. So in addition to that 50 program, we also have a few select projects that come through the Public Health Prevention Fund, or PPHF, and this is one of those. So this is called Best Fed Beginnings. This is really working on improving our baby-friendly hospitals in the United States. So we have only about 4% of hospitals that meet all 10 WHO standards for baby-friendly. So we're really trying to support those new moms. So this project is about $2 million over 3 years to get 90 more baby-friendly hospitals. And we work with Baby Friendly USA in getting that technical assistance and certification. So these are the states that were awarded. So here, California, Indiana, Massachusetts, and a few others. Again, really working on social support as well. This is a project that really works with community-based organizations to support the mom in a social environment. So this project is a little different than the maternity hospitals. It's really meeting that mom and providing the outreach once she's left the hospital. In addition to the breastfeeding area, we do receive some select funds for the childcare area. So a couple of the initiatives that we're working on, one is Let's Move Childcare. So we know, as we've been looking at a lot of that school data, that we already have children entering the school age obese, or overweight, and therefore on the path. And so we've really been emphasizing the child care setting, which you'll hear more about from the Rhode Island work. But we know that more than 12 million children spend 30 hours or more. So we can do as much as we can to empower parents to make the right choice, but for almost 6 to 8 hours a day, the children are out of their realm. And so how can we create the best models in the child care center? So that's one of our projects. The other is with Nemours, which is working in learning communities. So in 6 states, for example, we're bringing together regional teams in a somewhat of a train-the-trainer model. We don't have enough money to reach each individual organization, but really using more of a collaborative effort. So with Let's Move Childcare, for example, we have a website that really provides a lot of peer networking, resource materials, and ways that these individual centers go on and do an assessment. So KNAPSAC, which is a nutrition and physical activity assessment, there's a checklist for them to see where they're at. A lot like School Health Index, where you'd have wellness and other folks go in and see where was their school at. This kind of works for childcare, where they see what are the best practices that they want to achieve, picking a few and really working on tailored action plans. On our site, we also show who has signed up. We have every state has childcare providers, and we have over 10,000 centers currently as part of Let's Move Childcare. So those are a few things that we do really with our state health departments or through that kind of state work. Another core function I talked about was surveillance. So a lot of people are used to things like NHANES, or National Health and Nutrition Survey, or BRFSS, or behavioral risk factors. But a lot of times that really wasn't getting down to what was the actionable parts in the environment and policy. So since about 2007, we've been actually collecting through other sources the environmental measures that really can galvanize states to work on these strategies that I've talked about. This allows some competition between states. Neighbor states can see how are they doing compared to another one. And it really invites multiple stakeholders to take action. So these are a couple of examples. You can find them on our website. But so, for example, this is our second fruit and vegetable report. In here, you can see your percentage of farmers markets that accept EBT, for example. You can look at your state and see what's the percentage of agricultural land dedicated to fruit and vegetable production. Does your state have a farm-to-school policy? Does it have farm-to-preschool policy? So it really gives you the snapshot of environmental and policy indicators on one side, and then the other side is the youth data from YRBS and the BRFSS data. So it gives you both the intake data as well as environment and policy. We have the same for breastfeeding, for physical activity, and one that we call the children's food environment, which crosses in the home related to eating meals together, having TV viewing, but also some of the childcare policies. So this just gives an example of those. And so we're not on a specific timeline for these. We'd love to say every 2 years these come out, but some of it is due to data sources. We work with a lot of USDA data, for example, and some of that might not come out for every 4 years. So this just shows kind of the ongoing nature of putting out this type of surveillance. We also want to be able to support our states and localities with the best evidence. You know, what is the evidence base for what are the strategies for childhood obesity? So for one of our projects, we went ahead, you know, community guide in a sense is so rigorous that many of our interventions, so for example, farmers markets in a community, we're really not ready for that. We don't have a lot of good, robust papers that are showing effect sizes that at the moment we can bring together. I fear we'd find insufficient evidence, which in itself can be a negative connotation toward that thing. So we decided not to just, you know, rely on those very systematic reviews, but also look at expert consensus, and then research and practice tested interventions. And one of the sites and groups that we work with is the UNC Center for Training and Research Translation. And on that site, they've gone ahead and looked, they've done evaluation, in a sense, canned interventions that other states and locales can interpret and adopt in their settings. And in all of those interventions, you can see what was the health effect that they were looking at. So for example, was it a change in sales of diet of certain products, say in a cafeteria, or was it fruit and vegetable intake? So the Center TRT website really allowed us to see, is there a plausible reason for why this would impact childhood obesity? And from that, we published a review last year, and Jen Foltz is the first author. And I can provide that to folks if they're interested. So in addition to then giving that kind of expertise out to folks who are interested in what's working, we also were lucky enough now to have a 4-year project that was funded through ACA. So this is a $25 million project that is both a clinic and public health. So what I call this is somewhat like CTG or CPPW on steroids, and that it brings together primary care and public health. In many of our other interventions, we're disconnected from the clinical setting, but now with so much money, infrastructure, and effort going into primary care to really support obesity, this is our chance to bring together both the screening, counseling, referral part, as well as healthy weight clinics. And meeting families where they're at. So this is a 4-year project that really is to help underserved kids that are 2 to 12. These are kids that would be eligible for CHIP, so the Child Health Insurance Program. So this is kind of the working poor above kind of the Medicaid group. So really a large segment of the population at the moment who may not be receiving as much care. We include the family as part of this intervention. We work with existing coalitions, and we have community health workers that are either part of the medical team or part of that community outreach. So community health workers have been used a lot in, say, diabetes prevention, but not as much in obesity. But how can community health workers work with parents on parenting skills, like turning off the TV, how to kind of pick those battles related to food shopping? How can they really provide resources? So helping low-income folks find opportunities for physical activity, working with them to get fruit and vegetable vouchers, for example. And in this community, we also work with social media and other awareness. This is somewhat different than the public health practice programs that I've listed. CPPW, REACH, CTG are all public health practice. They're evaluating for the sake of their program refinement. CORD is actually a research project. It goes through IRB, has very robust impact evaluations and cross-site evaluations. So this is our model for CORD. So again, multi-setting, multi-level interventions. We're thinking social ecological, so we work with the individual, the family, and the population. Many of our CDC approaches don't include the person. It's because we don't have enough funds. We work out at the outer spheres of the social ecological model. We're really hoping other groups, other entities are supporting the individual. So many times you'll look at our materials and go, but where are the people in the public health? Right now we're really working on the environmental change and hope that other groups are also augmenting. So the core grantees, there are three individual sites across the nation. So San Diego State is working in Southern California, very high Hispanic population. University of Texas has catchment areas in Austin and Houston. And the Massachusetts Department of Public Health is working in New Bedford and Pittsburgh. We also, these are quasi-experimental studies, and so we do have control catchment areas. So for example, Lowell is the control here in the state of Massachusetts. And then we have an evaluation center that has the daunting task of looking across these multiple settings, multiple sites with multiple settings. So these are not canned interventions. This is meeting the communities where they're at and having them work with all of these groups with their existing capacities. So we've developed common measures. So we've taken these from validated instruments, and so you can see some of the key ones here. So BMI, fruits and vegetables, physical activity, screen time, sugar drinks, water, sleep, and then all the way through a number of things on parenting skills, satisfaction with care. So we'll have measured data on all of these sites. This is just an example of what we're doing in the childcare area. So for example, we have 60 childcare centers that are involved in CORD. Each of them is doing a KNAPSAC assessment to really look at the policy and environmental implications of where they're at and what they can work on. They are provided trainings, toolkits, and TA. And then some of them have the extracurriculum part, so CATCH for childcare, for example, or SPARK. That may have been done in school settings and others. And then there's also a parent outreach component. So again, newsletters, posters, and other ways to have those parents. So we talk about often in the childcare setting, we can do as best we can, but then if the parents or others, grandparents, aren't providing healthy food at home, in a sense, you can sabotage your intervention if you say childcare, leading to the intake and the obesity. We really want to wrap around to understand how is the home environment helping support that. Otherwise, we set ourselves up for failure in evaluation. We do a lot in the community context. So looking at the community capacity, for example, we use the Wilder inventory to assess coalition strength. We're using a community-based surveillance of policy and environment. We're using GIS and other kind of data, even navigational tools, and then looking at things like, you know, district wellness policies that are supporting those children. In addition to that type of research, we're involved with a number of collaborative partnerships. So NCORE is the National Collaboration on Childhood Obesity Research. This is USDA, NIH, Robert Wood Johnson, and CDC. If you haven't visited the site, we have a measures registry on measures that you can use for surveillance or evaluation. We have surveillance system registries. As I mentioned, the UNC Center TRT is a great place to go and look at the types of interventions that communities and other settings can implement. It concerns health equity, adoption, and other parts, so if you're interested in seeing if that type of strategy can be developed for your place. And then we have thematic policy research networks, and Angie's going to talk a little bit about that as well. But we have one called PAPRIN, so it's the Physical Activity Policy Research Network, and we have one called NOPRIN, so the Nutrition and Obesity Policy Research and Evaluation Network. Our NOPRIN sites, for example, are shown here. So those in red are provided funding. So these PRCs receive a small annual amount of funding, about $70,000. To conduct research. So some of it is policy identification, some of it is policy implementation, along the lines of the strategies that I've talked about. This could be food service guidelines, this could be child care policy. And the blues are those that are unfunded but part of our network as affiliates. So we talk about how policy can impact environment, and you know, we really try to move beyond just the physical environment, but that could be the presence of food stores, water stations. We think about economic, the impact on economic from policies, social, for example, engagement at farmers markets, where we may have not seen that type of interactions, and then point of decision information. So at this meeting, you've probably heard a lot about front of pack, menu labeling. How can some of those policies lead to changes? So if you're interested in this type of work, we actually do support a number of working groups where any kind of partner in the world can join us. You don't have to be funded by CDC. So we have those in water access and sugar drink reduction, rural food access, policy communications, food policy councils, and then a couple that we work across our sister thematic networks, including healthy hospitals, and then with the Robert Wood Johnson folks, we also now have a new child care research work group. So if you're interested, you can go to noprin.net and find our contact information. In addition to this type of work, again, we really want to support states and partners. So we work on providing guides and toolkits. So for example, CDC has a health equity resource toolkit for state practitioners to think about how to bring health equity into their strategies. We have a recently published paper on how to develop stories from the field, how to, as robustly as you can, talk about the work that's going on in your area. And then at the individual kind of community level, again, logic models and framework building for how you're thinking about a policy intervention. In addition to this, we have a healthy food retail legislation fact sheet if you want to see what your state has going on related to improving supermarkets, corner stores, and others. We have that available. We also have model policy for food service and vending. And we have a number of strategy guides. Our latest is a guide to breastfeeding interventions, and those are found at our website as well. So in closing, I just really want to thank you. I'm proud to be supported by all of you as taxpayers. I've been at the CDC for 14 years, and it's a great place to work, and I really feel at APHA. It's just a wonderful time to see so much action in obesity prevention. This is really nutrition and physical activity, but it really brings in so much more than that, and so it's great to have all of you here today. Thank you. Sure. So there's time for a couple of questions.
You mentioned early on epidemiology and surveillance. That's often something that is really important, but not well funded, not exciting enough for places like the National Institute of Health. Do you partner with the NIH or other agencies to do this basic surveillance work when individual researchers have established cohorts?
So a little bit of a yes. So through the National Collaborative on Childhood Obesity Research, we do work with NIH. Some of that is strategic planning around not duplicating. So at the higher level, OMB and other folks will look to make sure that we are not duplicating efforts across federal agencies. So some of it has to do with what's that collaborative mode. So for example, the NCI has a methodology branch that really helps work on the most valid and reliable metrics that then many times we can actually bring into local, state, or national surveillance. So I'd say yes, that we don't maybe have the resources for developing new instruments or metrics, but that's really where NIH comes in at the level of having researchers who are looking at that. NCI does fund the CHIS, the California Health Interview Survey, so that's one of our largest state-based surveillance systems. So I think that's a nice example of how they're supporting that. It doesn't necessarily duplicate with BRFSS, so there is crosstalk between these agencies. But there's not a lot of resources for surveillance. So these indicator reports are an example where we're scouring, the Community Commons, USDA's Food Atlas. How can we bring together and synthesize in one easy place? Because if you don't know, Google can be your worst enemy because you can be finding non-valid, just really indicators that may not, work best for either evaluation or surveillance.